to the Jeff Pohler Show on FN Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106 if you want to respond to anything we are talking about this morning. Still to come on the program from WVNN in Huntsville and Yellowhammer News, Dale Jackson is with us in the 11 o'clock hour. Brendan Dean, Democratic U.S. Senate hopeful, former mayor of Brighton, Alabama, has asked for some airtime. So we'll talk to him in the 11 o'clock hour. And Steve Flowers, columnist, will be with us as well in the 11 o'clock hour. So please stay tuned for that. But joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest, who I feel like is in a better position than probably last time than when we talked to him. Congressman Mo Brooks, running for U.S. Senate as well from the 5th Congressional District. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Yourself, Jeff?
I am doing well. It's good to be back on the air. Actually, in my had my wisdom teeth taken out on Friday. So it turned out not to be as bad as I thought it would be, but it wasn't pleasant. I'll just leave it at that. Let's talk about you, though, your campaign. Let's start out here. You know, it feels like the other two candidates are going at each other, and you've been able to kind of do your blocking and tackling and hit the trail and do campaign things that are improving your position.
Well, we've been working hard around the state. We're convinced that if we get the truth out about my public policy positions versus those of our opponents, Alabama is a conservative state. People figure out that I'm the only real conservative in this race, and they'll vote accordingly, and we'll do just fine. Unfortunately, both Katie Britt and Mike Durant, they have a ton of either very liberal money or special interest group money, and so that's what we're fighting more than anything else. They're able to do mass marketing on the airwaves. We're doing retail marketing where we meet with people one-on-one and in groups of 20, 40, 50, 100, whatever it may be. But once people hear the message and they understand the deception involved in the other two candidacies, that they're both Trojan horses, neither are conservative, then we do very, very well.
Right. And, you know, it feels like this race, now early stages, there was a lot of discussion about what is Donald Trump going to do. Donald Trump, and obviously losing the endorsement and things change, but it feels like as we've entered this stage, it's less and less about that.
Well, we're not electing Donald Trump to the United States Senate. We're electing someone from the state of Alabama to the United States Senate, and what is most important is how you're going to handle adversity and how you're going to handle these public policy issues. Donald Trump's endorsement has some effect, but then again, sometimes it doesn't do what's necessary, as evidenced by 2017, where Donald Trump endorsed two different candidates for United States Senate on the Republican side, and both ended up losing. Now, in 2020, Donald Trump endorsed Tommy Tuberville, and Tommy Tuberville ended up winning. So he's won one, lost two. But still, his endorsement carries some weight with some people. But most important, the people of the state of Alabama want to know someone who's going to stand up for what's right. And one of the unexpected benefits of my standing for the Constitution, my insisting, even in the face of political adverse winds, that, Mr. President, you can't rescind the election. You can't be reinstated. Neither the law, United States Code, nor the United States Constitution permit it. And I think that's carried some weight with a lot of voters. I'm not sure what you've thought about this, but we've been on the upswing. Since that. How far it will continue, I don't know. But people in Alabama, they want someone who's going to do what's right. And I took an oath to defend the United States Constitution, to protect the United States Constitution. I have a long track record of fighting for the foundational principles that have made us who we are as a country. And more people are starting to understand that, and they definitely appreciate it once they understand it.
How much are you hearing about that, actually? Now, I was at that rally in Coleman, and I got the sense people at that time, that was back in August of last year, are still kind of upset about what had happened with the 2020 election. But is that becomes increasingly in the rearview mirror now. What do you think? Is it still the potent topic that it was?
Well, voter fraud and election theft is a big topic. It was a big topic in 2020. It's a big topic in 2022. But it is impossible to change what happened in 2020 if you're going to obey the law. and the United States Constitution, the United States Code, give you one bite at the apple to fix the damage that was done, and that was on January the 6th. And we fought. I led that fight. But once that went into the past, there's nothing you could do about what happened in 2020. Now, what we can do looking forward, and this is what I try to emphasize to people, is we have to win elections in 2022 and 2024 if we're going to change the law that has these systemic flaws that allowed voter fraud and election theft to take place to the degree that it did in 2020. So we're between a rock and a hard place here. You've got voter fraud risk, but at the same time, you cannot fix those voter fraud problems unless you have a majority of the votes in various legislatures around the country or in the United States Congress. And so that's what I've been trying to get people to focus on, is get back in the game. We have to win the elections in 2022 and 2024 if we're going to fix and eliminate the systemic flaws in our election system. And if it means we've got to win an election with 54 or 55% of the vote in order to be credited with 51%, well, then that's the task in front of us. That's what we have to do. And I say that as someone who's gone through that before. Jeff, as you know, I'm not sure how many of your listeners know, but the Democrats targeted me for voter fraud. They targeted me in an effort to steal an election. They rigged 25% of the voting machines in my legislative district, registered votes for everybody on the ballot except for Mo Brooks, and we still won despite that. And so whatever the number is that we have to get to be credited with a majority, that's the number we have to get. And if we get that, then we can start changing the rules that the Democrats so unfortunately took advantage of to win in 2020.
Isn't it a remarkable, Congressman, that with everything the Democrats did in 2020 and with COVID, but they created a system that was very favorable to them. And now whether they did that properly or improperly, you know, that's sort of the debate. But despite what they did, it made it easier for Democrats to vote, extended the election period, and made it an election season, as you put it. They just barely won. It took a couple of weeks there for the Associated Press to finally call the race. They just barely won that race despite everything they had done. And you kind of wonder, now we're looking at hit at 2022 and 2024, you see some of the legislatures around the country react to it and adjust, Republican legislatures, that is. But do you feel like we're sitting here today in a better place than where we were, say, 2 years ago?
Marginally better. The strides that have been made have been small, incremental steps, baby steps. They are not what we need. And we have to address the systemic flaws that were identified in the bipartisan Commission on Federal Election Reform report in 2005. We have to fix them. We have no choice. That means no mass mail out of ballot. That was a recommendation of a bipartisan federal commission 17 years ago. No mass mail out of ballot because you don't have good chain of custody. You don't know who's casting those ballots. Contrast that to when, say, Jeff Poor goes to his voting location in Baldwin County. He shows his photo ID. The poll worker checks his name off the list, hands him a ballot. He carries that ballot to a little booth where he can vote secretly so that his secret ballot rights are protected. He marks his ballot. He carries it to the voting machine and inserts it into the machine. That's good, strong, solid chain of custody from the moment that voter walks into the precinct until the moment that voter walks out. Contrast that to millions upon millions of ballots being mailed every which way. Nobody knows who's casting those ballots. So that's one of the things we have to do. We have to require a photo ID. We have that in the state of Alabama. Some states require no identification. So if I were to walk into Jeff Poor's polling location in Baldwin County and say, I'm Jeff Poor, they'd be obligated to give me a ballot, even though I show no identification of any kind. And that happens. We have people who are paid election thieves, and there have been plenty of exposés and articles written about them where they're willing to be quoted anonymously about how they steal elections. Folks, this is one of the problems. We need to have photo ID. That's also a recommendation of the Commission on Federal Election Reform. And a really big one is we have to stop non-citizens from voting in our federal elections. Okay? Somewhere in the neighborhood of 800,000 to 1.7 million non-citizens voted in 2020. They're not supposed to be controlling the destiny of our country. They're not even a citizen of the United States of America. And a big law that needs to be changed is we need to repeal Section 5 of the National Voter Registration Act that makes it illegal for our voter registrars to require proof of citizenship. The law ought to be exactly the opposite. Our voter registrar should be required to require proof of citizenship, but instead, we've got a law on the books, the United States Code, that makes it illegal for our voter registrars to require proof of citizenship. That's wrong. So everyone hearing my voice, Google it, Commission on Federal Election Reform. It's a bipartisan commission headed up by Democrat Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, Chief of Staff, James Baker. 2005, when there was not a partisan election contest that could taint the results one way or the other, and they identified numerous systemic flaws, and I've just mentioned two or three of them. And if we fix those, if we abide by that commission's recommendation, then we'll have a much more honest and accurate election system. So that's one of the things that I fight for, but we need more people in Washington, D.C. who will actually do that. We need more people in our legislatures who will actually do that. So far, the baby steps we've taken, they help, but they don't fix the problem.
Joined by Congressman Mo Brooks of the 5th Congressional District, also running for U.S. Senate here on the program. Congressman, I want to get you to react to this kind of news that came out last week. I don't know if you're aware, but there's like leaked audio of Kevin McCarthy talking to Liz Cheney about Donald Trump and those moments after January 6th. Do you have any reaction to that?
It's a minor reaction. We have people speaking off the cuff on a regular basis. I'm a little bit disturbed that someone would secretly tape record a conversation with Kevin McCarthy. If that happened in Washington, D.C., then it's a criminal offense. But it's not surprising. A lot of people in politics say a lot of different things to different people. Unfortunately, that is much too common an occurrence. You're seeing it in this United States Senate race, where people now look at the polling data, they know exactly what the public wants to hear, so they're just parroting it back to the public. That's not the way our republic is supposed to operate. We're supposed to be candid in our assessments of what we believe is the right thing to do for our country, and then the public can make a decision on which path they believe is best. Now, what happened with Kevin McCarthy and Donald Trump? It's apparently tape recorded, so I don't think that there's any way that you can test that is in fact what Kevin McCarthy said. How it will play out in his race for the speaker, I don't know, but it is another little burden that he's going to have to carry if the Republicans capture the House and if he seeks the speaker's position. Quite frankly, I don't know of anyone else that is in a competitive posture vis-a-vis Kevin McCarthy. For those who don't know, you have to get a solid 218 votes. It's not a majority of those voting or a plurality of those voting. You have to have 218 votes. That's 50% plus one of the members of the United States Congress. And so that's a big hurdle for anybody to get. And if the Republicans split, well, then, of course, none of them get to 218, and we have no speakership until such time as someone gets that 218. Fortunately, if we capture the majority of the Congress in 2022, then it will only be a Republican who ultimately becomes Speaker of the House, but there might be a lot of maneuvering. A lot of people might see some opportunity. Maybe it'll be Steve Scalise. Maybe it'll be Kevin McCarthy. Maybe it'll be someone outside the House of Representatives. There are a lot of maybes, but to get 218 votes out of 435 congressmen is one thing. To get 218 votes when you've got maybe 230 Republicans, that means you can only afford to lose 12 Republicans. And that's the big challenge. Kevin McCarthy will have his allies who will stick with him come hell or high water. And if that's enough to deny someone else the speakership, then we're in a real quandary. Fortunately, I hope to be in the United States Senate this time next year. It'll be the House members who have to wrestle with that. We'll have our own battle over whether to keep or replace Mitch McConnell as the Senate Majority Leader. And as most people know, listening to my voice, I believe that we can do better than Mitch McConnell, certainly better than someone whose unfavorable ratings are 30 percentage points higher than his favorable ratings. And so that's the mission that I'll be focusing on.
Congressman, let me ask you this. January 6th Commission, I find it they are very freewheeling with the leaks. These things that they are finding just get put out to the media, people's private text conversations. We look at Jenny Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife, but a bunch of other correspondence between people just put out to the media. And I mean, like, I know these are public people, but the way this January 6th commission is being handled, and just the freewheeling nature of the media to put out private correspondence, and that no one's really questioning, you know, the liberties this commission has taken with its interactions with the media. I mean, I'm sure they've gone through your text messages and tried to figure out which ones they're going to give to the media. I mean, it just doesn't seem to me to be on the up and up.
It's not on the up and up. It is a witch hunt. It is a partisan committee. If it had been fair and balanced, then Nancy Pelosi would have accepted our Republican nominations to the committee in accord with the resolution that created the January 6th committee. But the January 6th committee morphed into a partisan witch hunt, and it's akin to what we saw with the Russian collusion, with the impeachment of Donald Trump, where the Democrats tried to conduct their so-called investigations in the secrecy of the basement of the United States Capitol in what's called a SCIF, which is a top secret high intelligence room where only limited people are allowed to get in and get out, thereby barring the American people from finding out what the truth was. And perhaps if all this had been done more openly, then the Russian collusion hoax would have been disclosed a lot earlier. Perhaps there would not have been an impeachment effort of Donald Trump. But that process is wrong, and you're seeing it duplicated now by the Pelosi Witch Hunt Committee. Everything that is being done should be done in public. This is the people's business. It's being done in government offices in Washington, D.C. And to me, that is the biggest drawback about the Witch Hunt Committee, is that they're trying to do things in secret, so that you don't know what the true facts are. You don't know what the demeanor of the witness was when the witness was making whatever statements the witness is making. You don't know the full testimony of the witnesses that adds texture and depth to it, so that you know the context in which these leaked statements are made. And that is a great disservice to the people of America. And I hope that they hold every single one of these dadgum Democrats and the two Pelosi Republicans, Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, responsible for this sham of a process that has been instituted. Now, in fairness, Adam Kinzinger is gone. He's not running for re-election. He figured out that he couldn't possibly win, so he's retiring. Hopefully, Liz Cheney in Wyoming will be replaced, too, by the good voters of the state of Wyoming. We don't need in our ranks quisling, much like we have with Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney.
And we'll get you out of here on this, Congressman. Is the way the Democrats have handled these last couple of years, well, the last 4 years, with the impeachments and with January 6th, is this going to be the new normal? Are Republicans, I know you're not going to be part of this in this next Congress, but is this something you think the Republicans are going to reciprocate and they're going to engage in this similar kind of behavior?
It is time that the Republicans in the House and in the Senate got a backbone of titanium and started conducting the kinds of investigations of bad conduct by the Democrats, akin to what the Democrats do against us on a regular basis. So Hunter Biden's laptop needs to be at the top of the list. We need to be investigating whether the Biden family syndicate has in fact been paid $11 million by communist Chinese leaders, as a recent book, Red Handed, I think is the name of it, alleges. There are lots of things that need to be discovered and examined. We need to have public hearings by way of example on what actually went wrong with the 2020 elections. Believe it or not, it is our duty in the United States Congress to conduct an investigation of voter fraud, election theft prior to the January 6th vote on the floor. The United States Congress shirked this responsibility. There was one hearing in one subcommittee led by Senator Johnson of Wisconsin, and that was it. There wasn't any substantive investigation, even though the United States Constitution, the United States Code, placed 100% of the election contest burden on the United States Congress. It is our job to determine who wins and who loses these elections.
Congressman, we got to get out of here. We're up against a break, but thanks for making time for us.
Thank you, Jeff. Take care.
That's Congressman Mo Brooks. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.